Welcome to the Delaware News on Voice Corps. I'm your volunteer reader, Brenda Kinzer. For the next half hour, I'll read articles from Delaware news sources which cover the city and county of Delaware, plus the towns, villages, and schools in Delaware County. I'll begin with this article from the Delaware Source, dated June 15, 2026, titled, Local Food, Loud Music, Lots of Fun, Your Guide to Summer Festivals in Delaware County, by Taylor Henninger. Delaware County. Summer is full of festival fun across Delaware County. This list of festivals will keep your weekends full, but if you're also looking for throughout-the-week fun and other things to do this summer, check out our other guides. Also be sure to peruse the Delaware Source Events calendar. This guide covers summer and early fall festivals only. Powell Festival. When June 19th, 5 to 11 p.m., and June 20th, 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., where? Powell Village Green Park, 47 Hall Street. This highly anticipated two-day celebration features live music, special vendors, food trucks, and a kids' zone. Friday night's lineup includes sounds from Our Short Ears and the Conspiracy Band, and Saturday stars Full Moon Fever, Stadium 11, and Vertical Horizon. The festival wraps up with a fireworks display on Saturday night at 10 p.m. The Delaware County Transit will provide a free shuttle to and from Powell Festival during festival hours with pickup and drop-off at Seldom Seen Park. There is also parking at Faith Life Church and other public parking lots. Taste of Downtown Delaware. When? June 23rd, 5 to 8 p.m. Where? Downtown Delaware starts at 20 East William Street. Taste of Downtown Delaware is a culinary scavenger hunt where attendees sample the restaurants and food trucks Delaware has to offer. Tickets are $45 and include 8 tasting coupons, which can be used at any of the participating businesses. Scioto Gardens 15th Arts and Gardening Festival. When? July 25th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Where? Scioto Gardens Nursery, 2870 Curve Road. This free event welcomes arts and plants enthusiasts at the Scioto Gardens Arts and Gardening Festival. Shop for handcrafted art, garden products, and native plants from 30 curated local artists and vendors. There's also live music and food from the Zaki Grill food truck in the garden-like setting of Scioto's Gardens Nursery. Unity Fest. When? August 15th, 4 to 9:30 p.m. Where? Mingo Park, 500 East Lincoln Avenue. Celebrate the end of summer with the Unity Fest at Mingo Park, which will bring a DJ playing dance music followed by a live band, Jeff German and the Blankety Blank, starting at 8 p.m. There will also be food trucks, vendors, and kids' activity area. If you're feeling active, run the Lincoln Mile ahead of the festival, which finishes in the park, or grab a good spot and watch. Columbus Zoo Lantern Festival. When? Thursday through Sunday evenings from August 20th to October 25th, 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Where? Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, 4850 West Powell Road. The Lantern Festival features 70 sets of Asian lanterns highlighting beautiful wildlife scenes from around the world. Multicolored LED animal lanterns will illuminate paths throughout various areas of the zoo, according to the website. During the festival, most animals are resting for the evening and will not be viewable, but guests can still see animals at Adventure Cove, North America Trek, Asia Quest, and Shores and Aquarium. Sunbury Sizzle and Sounds. When? August 22nd, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Where? Historic Town Square, downtown Sunbury. Sunbury Sizzle and Sounds is a music and food-forward festival featuring all-day lineups, a beer garden, food trucks, and a kids' zone. 12 to 1 p.m., DJ Flamingo. 1:30 to 3 p.m., Landon Ross. 3:30 to 5 p.m., Gravy. 5:30 to 7 p.m., Meet Me in Marengo. 7:30 to 9 p.m., North to Nashville. 9:30 to 11 p.m., The Prince Experience Headliner. Off-street parking is available around the area, and shuttle services are provided to get you right to the square. Oktoberfest at Zumbezi Bay. When? August 29th and 30th, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Where? Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, 4850 West Powell Road. Oktoberfest at Zumbezi Bay combines water park fun and German heritage, including German music. Enjoy pumpkin and fall-flavored beers on tap, courtesy of local breweries and Bavarian-style food. There will be live entertainment, but a schedule has not yet been released. Oktoberfest is included with regular Zumbezi Bay admission. Columbus Zoo admission is included. Parking is $12. Beer, Bourbon, and Wine Fest. When? September 12, 3 to 8 p.m. Where? Boardman Arts Park, 154 West William Street. This event features over 50 variety of beer, wine, cider, mead, and whiskey tastings alongside local food trucks, live bands, and artisan vendors. Delaware County Fair. When? September 19th through 26th. Where? Delaware County Fairgrounds, 236 Pennsylvania Avenue. The Delaware County Fair delivers a quintessential week of agricultural exhibits, classic midway rides, demolition derbies, and live concert entertainment. The legendary harness race, the Little Brown Jug, takes center stage Thursday. And the Sunday before the fair on September 13th is the 2026 All-Horse Parade, where horses, ponies, wagons, carriages, cowgirls, and marching bands walk down downtown Delaware streets. The parade steps off each year promptly at 3 p.m. from the main gate of the Delaware County Fairgrounds onto Pennsylvania Avenue. Our next article from the Delaware Source is dated June 15, 2026, titled, Five Individuals Given Trespass Warnings After Fights Break Out at Zumbezi Bay, by Jack Clemenda. Powell. No arrests were made on Saturday following reports of fighting at the Zumbezi Bay Water Park on Saturday. The Delaware County Sheriff's Office received a call at 5:31 p.m. on June 13th stating that approximately 15 to 20 people were fighting in the water park's Lazy River. Nicole Racy, Vice President of Communications and Marketing for the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, including Zumbezi Bay, said a group of guests was observed engaging in inappropriate roughhousing and running throughout the water park, creating safety concerns for other guests in and around several attractions. Racy told Delaware Source, our team addressed the behavior and asked approximately 10 individuals ages 17 to 19 to leave the water park. When they refused to comply, law enforcement assisted in escorting them from the property, she said. No arrests were made and no charges were filed. The sheriff's office confirmed that no arrests were made, but told members of the media that the officers gave trespass warnings to three juveniles and two adults for several years. Five sheriff's office deputies and one Powell police officer responded to the incident. At the time of publication, the sheriff's office is not sure what caused the incident. The safety and enjoyment of our guests remain our top priority, and we appreciate the cooperation of those who helped ensure a safe environment for everyone, Racy said. This isn't the first time the sheriff's office has responded to an incident at the Columbus Zoo property this summer. The zoo was forced to close on May 2nd and 5th after receiving swatting threats. Both threats, which occurred May 2nd and May 5th, were ultimately cleared according to a joint statement from the zoo and sheriff's office. No guests, employees, or animals were harmed. A statement from the zoo said they would reopen with an increased law enforcement presence and noted the sheriff's office is reviewing protocols for best practices regarding the zoo property. Our next article from the Delaware Gazette is dated June 17, 2026, titled Superintendent Discusses Open Enrollment, by Glenn Battisill. Delaware City Schools Superintendent Keith Pomeroy addressed open enrollment for the upcoming school year on Monday, stating the district has not changed its policy. Pomeroy's discussion was part of his report to the DCS Board of Education during its regular meeting at Willis Education Center. The first thing I want to be clear about is that the open enrollment policy has not changed, he said. Pomeroy said the policy is that students must apply for open enrollment each year and applications are reviewed annually for the upcoming school year. He added the decisions are based on a number of criteria that include available space in classrooms, grade levels, and individual school capacity. Pomeroy said students who previously attended Delaware City Schools also have their attendance rates and discipline referrals reviewed as part of the process. What is changing is you're seeing that many of our decisions are being driven by the reality of growth, Pomeroy explained. We're continuing to see class sizes across several grade levels and buildings increase. We're going to watch those closely. Right now, it's variable. Pomeroy said it's possible to see a lot of growth hit particular grade levels. We have certain grade levels that are larger than others right now. We're watching those closely, he said. As a result of all those, as we're reviewing applications right now, we're really looking to balance those class sizes and paying attention and ensuring that we can continue to provide a high-quality educational experience for students enrolled in the district. We understand that these decisions are difficult for families, nothing about them is easy, and we do not take them lightly in that process. Pomeroy said the district's responsibility is to maintain learning environments that support student success long-term, he added. Sometimes, making challenging decisions from an enrollment perspective is necessary when capacity is limited. We appreciate the community's understanding as we continue to manage growth and plan for the future. We know all of that is difficult. There's a lot to process and make decisions on, and we're working through all those and trying to be as transparent as possible in that process. Delaware City Schools Director of Communications Jennifer Rue reported Tuesday that 118 students applied for open enrollment from neighboring school districts and 79 students were approved. The 2026-2027 school year begins August 19th. You're listening to the Delaware News on VoiceCorps. I'm your volunteer reader, Brenda Kinzer. This next article from the Delaware Source is dated June 18, 2026, titled E-Bike Update, Powell City Staff to Research Formal Legislation, by Taylor Henninger. Powell. Powell officials may follow Upper Arlington's example of pursuing formal legislation to better enforce e-bike rider rules. City staff and the police department are in the early stages of determining an approach to tackle persistent e-bike issues. It's very serious and becoming a systemic problem everywhere, City Manager Andy White said. I'm sure we've all experienced it in our travels in Powell, in Dublin, in Worthington. Last month, the Operations Committee heard from Powell Police Sergeant John Wyrick about the department's launch of an e-bike educational campaign, which similarly resembles Dublin's and New Albany's approach. It includes pamphlets with safety tips and police handing out Johnson's ice cream coupons to kids practicing safe riding techniques. Powell Police Chief Ron Sallow said he also plans to do in-person outreach through Safety City, a booth at Powell Fest with officers ready to talk about riding rules, and school resource officers at nearby Olentangy schools hosting presentations for students when school is back in session. So far, Sallow said he thinks it's been a success with officers talking to lots of kids. Now city staff is ready to look beyond just education by researching formal legislation, which they discussed at the Operations Committee meeting on Tuesday evening. It comes in response to growing concerns from residents and the police. Thankfully, we haven't had a death yet, but if we had one, unfortunately, it wouldn't surprise me with the way they ride everywhere and have no respect for stop signs, stoplights, whatever. It's pretty bad, committee and council member David Lester said. Sallow said many people purchase e-bikes on Amazon that don't meet the classifications under the state of Ohio. They're actually e-dirt bikes that are not street legal. They're not roadway legal, he said. Upper Arlington working to pass legislation. Upper Arlington City Council is advancing legislation that essentially treats e-bikes, e-scooters, and similar motorized devices differently than standard bicycles, meaning they're enforced under different rules. Prior to moving legislation forward, Upper Arlington City staff sent out a community engagement survey asking residents their opinions and attitudes towards e-bikes. The survey found that over 90% of residents view e-bikes and similar devices as a moderate to significant safety concern. In response, city staff proposed an ordinance that, if passed, would require motorized vehicles not licensed by the Ohio Bureau of Motor Vehicles, such as e-bikes, motorized scooters, and electric skateboards, to be formally registered with the Upper Arlington Police Department to operate within the city or park on any public property. Minors to wear a helmet while riding one of those devices. E-bike riders who have a valid driver's license would receive free registration via an affidavit, but unlicensed riders, particularly minors, must pass a collaborative public safety course to obtain a registration sticker. Parents and guardians of minors must also review training materials, accept financial responsibility for fines, and acknowledge the helmet rule. Violations would be categorized as unclassified misdemeanors, subjecting devices to immediate immobilization or physical seizure and a $150 fee, according to a memo from Upper Arlington City Manager Stephen Shoney. How will Powell use Upper Arlington's example? White asked the committee to sign off on Powell staff researching how they might create a similar survey. I've also talked to our law director. He's worked on similar initiatives in other communities, so this is not the end-all, be-all, White said. I thought it was a good example to get our conversation started. That doesn't mean if one kid were to lose his life on an e-bike, that's a problem and would be concerning to me. We've had several close calls, Sallows added. Sallows said one individual was riding his e-bike on the North Liberty Street sidewalk where he wiped out while wearing a helmet and a car hit his head, resulting in a tragic brain injury. Another 14-year-old female riding a non-legal e-bike near the library failed to see an oncoming car and suffered serious injuries. She's okay, to my understanding, but she's going to be dealing with some of the injuries for a long time, Sallows said. Our next article from the Delaware Source is dated June 18, 2026, titled New Grief Kits Available at Delaware County District Libraries for Young Children Coping with Loss by Jax Lamenda. Delaware. People of all ages grieve, and recognizing, coping with, and eventually overcoming that grief can be tough. That's why the Delaware County District Library, DCDL, recently teamed up with nonprofit Cornerstone of Hope to make the process easier. Children ages 0 to 8 can now borrow grief kits at all 5 of the county's library locations. Cornerstone of Hope secured grant funding from the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board for the kits and handpicked items designed to help children ease their minds after a tough loss. Every child processes through and expresses their grief differently, said Jacqueline Ford, Youth Bereavement Coordinator at Cornerstone of Hope, in a press release. It is helpful to use this kit with an open mind regarding what may be most helpful for your child. Ford told Delaware Source she was once a teenager who grieved the loss of a parent and that she came to this project of making grief support accessible in a personal way. I wanted to meet the needs of grieving kids and families in more than just a support group, she said. If families aren't ready to come through our doors to attend a support group or to seek individual counseling, I want them to be able to have access to things at home in an environment that feels safe and secure. The kit includes books that appropriately explain the dying process, fidgets and games designed for people to reuse and encourage their children to express their emotions. Ford said some of the inspiration for the items in the kits came from nonprofits' Cleveland location and their work with the Cuyahoga County Libraries on similar kits. We often talk about reading literacy, but emotional literacy is just as critical, said Kelly Cochran, Youth Services and Programming Coordinator for DCDL. These kits, created by experts in the area, give children the vocabulary and creative outlets they need to understand big, complex feelings like grief at a very young age. How to recognize grief and borrow a kit. Signs of grief in young children can include regressive bathroom behavior or being extra clingy to a parent or guardian, Ford explained. Potty training may have been successful when the child was 2, but maybe now, as an 8-year-old boy who may be grieving, they're having accidents at night. Or maybe they were developing a sense of autonomy, but now they're especially clingy to a parent, a guardian, or another trusted adult in their life. Those aren't bad things, she explained. This is just how their mind, that's not fully developed and emotionally intelligent, is trying to process something difficult. DCDL Communications Coordinator Nicole Fowles said one kit will be available at each branch of the DCDL system, which includes Delaware, Liberty, Orange, Ostrander, and Powell locations. Families can find the kits in the children's area or place one on hold by searching Children's Grief Kit. DCDL cardholders can check them out for up to 14 days. Fowles said this isn't the first time DCDL has put non-traditional items on its shelves. Memory care collections, physical items like a board to practice shoelace tying and motor skills, and flashcards and workbooks that feature dry erase pages for children to practice math are also available at the libraries. She said all these things and now the grief kits are niche needs that if you don't need it, you don't know we have it, but if you do need it, you're grateful that we do have it. This is just the start of our partnership with Cornerstone of Hope, Fowles said. These kits are great for that young age of 0 to 8, and we hope that we can continue to expand that. Grief doesn't know an age, and this is a really great start of a partnership that we hope will continue in the future. You're listening to the Delaware News on Voice Corps. I'm your volunteer reader, Brenda Kinzer. This next article from the Delaware Dispatch is dated June 18, 2026, titled "Prosecutor Reviewing Probe into Delaware County Judge Accused of Sexual Assault" by Maria DeVito. The Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office is reviewing the findings of an investigation into a Delaware County judge accused of sexually assaulting and harassing an assistant county prosecutor. A spokesperson for the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office, which was appointed as a special prosecutor in November, received the investigative file on May 7th from the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, which investigated the allegations against Delaware County Common Pleas Court Judge James Shook. The investigation includes thousands of communications and other evidence that must be reviewed. Our office is diligently reviewing the matter, Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office spokesperson Lexi Bauer told the Dispatch via email June 17th. Shook is retiring and leaving the bench, according to letters he sent to Governor Mike DeWine and Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Sharon Kennedy. The letters do not state why Shook is leaving the elected position. Shook had been on voluntary leave since an assistant prosecutor in the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office filed for a civil stalking protection order against him in November 2025. The petition alleges Shook forced her to have sexual contact twice and stalked her for months. Shook has admitted to having a personal relationship outside of his marriage, but has denied any allegation of criminal conduct. In a January statement, Shook's attorney, Bradley Coffell, said Shook passed a voluntary polygraph test and never stalked, threatened, coerced, assaulted, or menaced anyone, and he has never engaged in behavior that could reasonably be construed as criminal. Ohio law states that the governor will appoint a replacement, and then the remainder of the term will be up for election at the next general election. Our next article from the Delaware Gazette is dated June 19, 2026, titled "Report, 5th BWLS Elementary Recommended" by Gary Budzak. Sunbury. To keep pace with growing enrollment, Big Walnut local schools may need to spend more than $100 million in building renovations, including a new elementary, over the next decade. That was among the findings given in a presentation to the Board of Education at its meeting on Monday by a facilities task force. The task force, made up of community members, educators, and builders, presented its findings in a 33-page report that took 17 months to put together. The project executive is Eric Baltzel, engineer and CEO of Garman Miller, a design firm with operations in 5 states. The school board was told the guiding principles behind the report was an open process, all voices welcome, emphasis on accuracy, and no predetermined outcomes. Each current school facility, including the bus garage, wrestling building, and district office, were assessed in 2025 by Garman Miller. Enrollment projections from Future Think 2019 and Wolpert 2 reports in 2025 were factored into the recommendations. There are 4,271 students currently enrolled in the district, with building capacity for 5,352 students. Using the median projection, 6,326 students may be attending Big Walnut local schools for the 2034-2035 school year. Buildings where enrollment is expected to exceed capacity is the high school, middle school, grades 6 through 8, intermediate school, grades 4 through 5, Big Walnut Elementary, BWE, and Highland Saunders Elementary, grades K through 3. General Rosecrans and Prairie Run Elementary schools are expected to remain below capacity. Recommendations for the elementary buildings include increased capacity to accommodate 2,000 students, renovate the existing 37,289 square foot BWE at a cost of $11.2 million and the 42,800 square foot Saunders at $13.6 million, and construct a new 65,000 square foot building in the North Star area or a future property at a cost of $31.85 million. It was felt that 12,000 to 16,000 in additional square footage was needed for the intermediate school to accommodate 1,000 students. This would cost $12.1 million. An additional 20,000 to 28,000 in square footage would be needed to accommodate 1,500 students at the middle school, the report said, at a cost of $50.5 million. As for Big Walnut High School, further study was needed. In order to accommodate 2,000 students, a small addition could be needed, but not urgent based on current trends. No costs were given. Following the presentation, School Board President Stephen Fuji said there's a lot of information to process and no decisions would be made until all board members were present. Zach Duffy was absent. He said that fortunately the district is in good financial standing. Later in the meeting, the district was presented with the Ohio Auditor of State Award with distinction for fiscal year 2025. Regional liaison Scott Brown told the board this award is for a clean audit report submitted by the district treasurer. The Ohio Auditor of State Award with distinction is a prestigious recognition presented to local governments and school districts that demonstrate the highest standards of financial record keeping, transparency, and accountability, the meeting agenda said. It is a highly exclusive honor awarded to fewer than 5% of the thousands of entities audited by the state each year. Our final article is dated June 20th, 2026, titled Hometown Theaters Take Center Stage by Glenn Battisill. The Strand Theater held a presentation and panel discussion centered on photographer Benita Van Winkle's upcoming book about hometown theaters that features The Strand. Van Winkle, whose book, America's Hometown Movie Theaters, Please Remain Standing, will be released in September, gave a presentation at The Strand Wednesday evening and participated in a panel discussion about local theaters like The Strand and what they mean to the community. Van Winkle's book is the culmination of more than 40 years of work and began in 1982 with Van Winkle taking photos of her hometown movie theater, the Carib Theater in Clearwater, Florida, before it was torn down years later. Van Winkle said she cried for weeks after the theater was destroyed and began photographing other hometown theaters across the United States. If that theater meant that much to me, surely other people must feel that way about their theaters, Van Winkle said Wednesday afternoon before a presentation. That set me on the path. I really want to celebrate what small-town theaters do for their communities. If you have a theater, you have a town, said Van Winkle. I've gone through towns where it looks dusty and closed up, and then you see the theater is closed. For more information about Van Winkle's book, go to www.bowerandean.com/product/americas-hometown-movie-theaters-please-remain-standing/. That's all for the Delaware News. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more programming on VoiceCorps, your audio access to the world.